Ian Kermode has never forgotten the stories his father told him about World War I. Now 79 years old, Ian considers himself to be pretty lucky that he was able to have a long and loving relationship with his dad, who returned from the Western Front with the Military Medal for his service. But it was a chance encounter in a Belgian pub 6 years ago which led Ian on a quest of a different kind, the Brothers in Arms Memorial Project, dedicated to researching and remembering the sacrifice of Australian families who lost more than one brother or sister during the war. Ian told me how his father's service has left an indelible mark on his own life.
My father's first initiation was at the Battle of the Somme. That sort of hardened them up pretty quickly. And they were around Pozieres, and they moved then towards Mouquet Farm, and they were involved in very heavy fighting. You know, a battalion is about 1,000 men. Well, during that fighting, they lost half their fighting force.
What did your dad tell you about going to war?
He didn't tell me a lot. You sort of grew up and you sort of understood that your father had been to war. That's all. And then one day at the Air State School, which I attended, I had a mate, his name was Philip Noak. Philip said to me, Dad told me that in New Guinea he had to drink water from a hole with a dead cow in it. So I went home and told Dad, and Dad's reply was, Son, I have drunk water out of holes with dead men in them. That's when I started to take in a few things, and they're still there today. So I learnt the Morse code. I borrowed a keyboard and I sat at the kitchen table with Dad. I can still see it today. I was 14. I sent a message to Dad, and he sent one back to me. And I said, Dad, you are going too fast. And he said, Son, you must be able to read at the same speed you send. You will only ever get one chance to get the message. That was my first lesson. Anyway, we're sitting there one time and he says to me, we were getting along there somewhere in France, and he said, I spied a couple of krauts setting up a machine gun. He said, but I got them first, son. I got them with grenades. You bowl grenades, son. You don't throw them. That's all that was said. What does a 14-year-old kid do? He doesn't ask questions. But Dad never ever told you any bullshit. You know?
You're hearing from Ian Kermode here on ABC Local Radio. He's speaking about his dad, Private Alfred Thomas Kermode, who served during World War I on the Western Front. And Ian, you also already mentioned he had an initiation of fire, quite literally, at the Battle of Somme. But he earned his military medal for keeping the lines open at the Battle of Polygon Wood. Tell us about the role of a signaller.
Well, of course, there were no radios those days, and they used to run lines out. And the Allies, the Anzacs, had captured a German pillbox, a machine gun post. They had them scattered all over the place. This captured German machine gun post, which is known as Garter Point, it became the headquarters, 1,500 yards to the forward post. I believe there was an 18-pounder every 9 metres. And under heavy bombardment, the Allies moved forward under the protection of this rain of shells landing on a row of pillboxes. Of course, they got return fire, but Dad walked backwards and forwards between the forward post and the battalion headquarters with that wire in his hand, and where it was broken, he would repair it and keep on going.
Can you defend yourself?
You can duck. There was heavy casualties. There was 2,600 casualties on the first day. It only lasted a few days. It's described in official records as like the continuous roar of a raging bushfire. He was in the 4th Division, the 13th Brigade and the 52nd Battalion. Anyway, after the Battle of Polygon Wood, it only lasted a few days because the Allies, the Anzacs, didn't muck around. They were pretty good soldiers. They did us a big service, and they, what Armistice Day must mean to us is that we must remember what these fellas did. They were getting 5 shillings a day, 5 bob a day, to cop a bullet.
I did look up Garter Point, which is something that you encouraged me to do before I came to see you for this interview, and I found an image there of a stretcher party of Australians bringing in wounded along a duckboard track. The landscape was so barren, just mud, not a tree anywhere. And yet, in the citation for your dad's military medal, one of the things that was mentioned was he was conspicuous for the cheerful and gallant manner in which he went about his work under heavy shell fire.
Dad, as I knew him, always had a wit, just the way he was. I mean, his mother died when he was 9. He was milking cows for a living at 11 and on the Western Front at 18. I mean, people today don't understand how life was.
It was 6 years ago, Ian and members of his family retraced his father's footsteps across the Ypres salient battlefields. He knew already of the 54,000 fallen Anzacs whose names are recorded at the Menengate Memorial to the Missing, because they had no graves. He'd also heard about a more recent discovery of 5 bodies exhumed from a road construction site close to where his father had served. But he never imagined he'd meet the man who made that discovery, let alone join his quest to bring about a permanent memorial to the sacrifice of Australian families who lost more than one son or brother during the war. It's called the Brothers in Arms Project.
Well, my connection came about by finding our way to Polygon Wood. There's a tavern there. It's called Anzac House. We took up a couple of tables. He was the owner of the tavern. He was delivering a plate of tucker to a table. And on the way back, I stood up in front of him. I said, my father was 3.5 years on the Western Front. Posiers on the Somme, Passchendaele, Ypres, all over really. He was a signaller, and he was awarded the military medal for keeping the lines open between the battalion headquarters and the forward post on the 26th of September 1917. Well, he did just stand there and look at me. And he said, what battalion? I said, the 52nd. And he said, was it West Oak Spur or Tokyo Spur? I said, it was Tokyo Ridge. He hit me in the belly and he said, I'll show you where he was. And I had already known about 5 Aussies being dug up under a roadway in 2006. And lo and behold, I'm talking to the man that exhumed those bodies. Johan van der Waller.
What did you learn from Johan?
I learnt that the Belgians have never forgotten what the Anzacs and the Canadians did for them. I mean, he calls his place Anzac House.
Here you are gaining the irrefutable evidence, I suppose, that your father would have literally rubbed shoulders with the 5 men whose bodies Johan had exhumed and was still trying to research the background of.
That's correct. Of the 5 bodies that were buried there, I mean, when somebody got killed, they just threw them in a shell hole and covered them. But there was one fellow, the last one that they discovered, was somebody who was lying on his back. He had a ground sheet wrapped over his upper torso, piece of copper wire wrapped around his neck to keep it in place. So somebody who really cared has buried him. His name was Jack Hunter, and he came from Nanango. So Johan hopped on a plane and he came to Nanangawa to meet the Hunter family, and the questions were answered. The reason why he was buried like that was because his brother Jim buried him. And the irony of it is that Jack, he went over there to keep an eye on his younger brother Jim. Apparently, in no man's land, Jack was sent out, and on the way back he got hit with a bit of shell and he crawled back into the trench. And Jim buried him because he fully intended to go back, take his body and put it in a cemetery. He marked the spot, but how would you ever find a spot on that moonscape? Hence, Johann, on the way back on the plane, he wondered how many families had lost more than one son. When he got back to Belgium, decided on the Brothers in Arms Memorial. There should be a memorial to all the brothers who were lost in the war. We have a lady on our committee who is ex-military. She did 8 tours of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq, but she's got access to files. And I know she's up to over 2,000 families that lost more than one son. So there were great sacrifices. A little country like Australia had gone up serving king and country. And I can tell you that the Belgians have never, ever forgotten. There used to be a bloke that would go to over there to the cemeteries. He would get eucalyptus tree branches and he would light little fires in amongst the tombstones. Anyway, this time he didn't have any matches. So he went to a store. The storekeeper said, he said, where are you from? He said, Australia. He said, there will be no charge. If it wasn't for the Australians, we would not be speaking our language today. That's what I suppose I'm trying to impart it to the audience, so that they understand. The Belgian people have never forgotten.
When you do pause on the 11th of the 11th, how will you feel this year, knowing that that Brothers in Arms Memorial is on its way to Belgium?
The statue has been completed. There will be a little ceremony, a few photos taken. Our benefactor is going to be there. The sculptor will be there. It's going to be picked up and put on the ship and on its way to Belgium. And the dream is going to be halfway there. You know, we started with nothing, and look what we've got.